I think a good place to start is with the fact that you are the exemplification in my mind of why you should hire liberal arts people in tech companies, because I've got a copy of your book, mm-hmm. Content Chemistry, and you know, I was going through it today to look for stuff I really wanted to ask questions about, and I finally read the bio in the very back where it says Andy graduated from the University of Iowa with a degree in Asian language and literature and a certificate to teach Chinese.
That's right.
I then looked on your LinkedIn page and it's like, oh my God, you're kidding me. So while you stumbled into tech, you started out in the land of liberal arts. Talk to me about that. How, what was that trip like?
Not that uncommon for the Gen X kids of the world like us, right? Because there wasn't a digital marketing class like the early 90s. Most of my friends in college didn't have a computer in their dorm. Email addresses were new. Yahoo was new. You know, these were early days of the internet. So it was like a computer lab and people brought their floppy disk to the lab. And, you know, so it was just early. So all of us in this generation are self-taught. I mean, almost all of us. There was no program for it. So my partner who started building websites right out of college in, you know, 1996 or earlier, his degree is in art. I didn't know what I wanted to study, and a friend of mine dared me to do Chinese with him, and it was like amazing, like so interesting and fun, and like teachers were great and like random, and loved it, loved the challenge. I wanted to study something that I could prove to myself that I'd learned it, like a hard skill, and foreign language felt like one of those, because if you do it and you know if you talk to people and they understand you and you understand them, then you've learned something. So it was an opportunity to try to make the investment my parents were making in my college into something that was, if not immediately applicable, it was at least kind of a practical skill. So foreign language, I felt great. But then, yeah, I mean, all of us went off and did different things and went in different directions. And late 90s, I had a job as an IT recruiter. And then early 2000, January of 2000, quit that job, started building websites with my friend and never looked back.
I find it really interesting because, you know, I could have you on the Nonfiction Brand Podcast and we could talk about content chemistry, the book and content marketing and all that stuff. And it'd be a tremendously interesting conversation. But I'm more interested in the Andy story, especially when it comes from the point of view of a liberal arts kid coming out, getting a job like most of us do, which is the first job that hires me is now my career. And then all of a sudden you made a big crossing the Rubicon decision of in 2000, 2001 to go create a company called Orbit Media and dive into the morass of website building at the time. And keep in mind, this is pre-Wix, pre-Squarespace, pre-anything that was easy. It was hand coding, HTML, and a real pain in the butt with nascent standards, meaning we kind of agree that this is going to be a standard, but not really, because the early days of the web was kind of people feeling out, well, what is this really going to be about? And so I can't help but think that your background in a complicated non-Latin language prepared you for the maze that was and still continues to be the modern internet. Because if you think it's finally figured itself out, you're wrong. Wait 2 minutes.
Learning a language builds confidence. It requires that you improve your learning skills, because to be efficient as an adult, acquiring a language is partly about learning to learn things, you know, how to study, how to memorize and process information. So anything you study can be good for that part of your brain. Like keeping your brain flexible enough to process new information in a way that is organized and can be output in a productive, useful way. So liberal arts does that for you. Makes you a better communicator, helps you work with other people, helps you improves your writing skills, improves some of your analytical skills. It's the squishy stuff, the using both halves of your brain. You know, these are things that the studies, people who study humanities tend to pick up on, right? Ambiguity, being comfortable with ambiguity. Anybody who studies history, it's an impossible subject. You know, there's never perfect understanding. You have to love ambiguity. Philosophy, same thing. Rhetoric, a lot of my friends, you know, English degrees, their brains are well adapted to a flexible, changing world. But there's actually a super applicable thing for my degree, which was I also got a certificate to teach. So you're studying pedagogy, curriculum development, creating lesson plans and activities. And that, although I didn't use it right away, in 2007, when I started doing content marketing, it suddenly became clear that marketing is about teaching. We're teachers. We're all teachers. Think about all the content, all your posts. You know, you're showing things, you're explaining things. Where the how-to content performs so well. This is a full circle story in my background and what I was doing in the early to mid-90s in Iowa City, Iowa. It's that I was learning to learn and learning to teach. And those are the two most important things if you want to be a digital marketer. Although random sounding, Asian language and literature. What? Like, why would you, what are you doing here? Why do you even live in the U.S.? Mandarin isn't very useful in the U.S., I've learned. People often say, oh, best degree, you know, the best, most important language for the future. If you live in China, I often wish I knew Spanish instead. You know, side note, you're sending your kids to school. You hope they learn a language. What language would you like your kids to know? Everyone says Mandarin now because Jeff Bezos' kids are learning Mandarin, whatever. If you want your kids to move halfway around the world, yeah, teach them Chinese or order from a restaurant twice a year. Like, it's not that practical of a skill for people living in the U.S., in my opinion. I often wish I knew Spanish. I rarely have the chance to use Chinese, but it's cool. I mean, it's a fascinating language. It builds a lot of confidence. You can speak to an extra billion people if, you know, I have no regrets at all.
You really hit upon something that I think is super important, and that is the idea that liberal arts teaches you how to think, how to learn, how to teach, because I am in violent agreement on that. I will derisively say sometimes that anybody can learn key commands. It's the higher level thinking of how to write, how to design, how to communicate. It's not just what looks good or sounds good. It's what actually convinces. And to use Jay Baer's favorite words, convince and convert, you want to get the word out there in a way that people respond and engage with. And I'm liberal arts all day long. And for those people who say college is a waste of money, I will say to you, you haven't gone to the right school, because you can get a really great education that teaches you how to think, how to write, how to learn, how to teach. And you don't have to pay that proverbial 100 grand tuition to do so. You might need to get a little creative, but it'll pay off in the end.
I heard a great quote yesterday. It was a physicist. He's passed away. Richard Feynman, I think they... Feynman, yeah. He said, there's a big difference between knowing the name of something and knowing something. To understand more deeply the mechanics of the concept, that's the job. It's not about being able to label everything. This is also the case for human thinking as opposed to artificial intelligence. Your point about the humanities background is the same point. Totally agree.
It's funny you bring up Richard Feynman, because I read one of his, he's had multiple biographies and autobiographies and you name it, Nobel Prize winning physicist. I remember a specific episode from his book about him talking about his childhood and his father. And his father taught him exactly what you just said, because as a boy, he was interested in birds. He wanted to name all the birds. And at one point, his father said, well, you know what? The Chinese call that bird this. The Germans call it this. The French call it this. What it's called doesn't matter. What's interesting is that there is a small little insect that lives its entire life cycle out on the wing of that bird before the bird dies. The idea that that insect wouldn't even touch ground ever, because its universe was on one wing of a bird. That's conceptual thinking and learning. And that, I think, really made an impact on Feynman, so much so that he mentioned it 60, 70 years later.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's the power of conceptual thinking. And I do want to point out that, listeners, you're listening to Andy Crestedina, who, if you don't have this guy on your radar, you gotta fix that now. Because the thing I love about your book, Content Chemistry, the Illustrated Handbook for Content Marketing, which is in its fifth edition, is that correct?
Yeah.
The thing I love about it as a creative director and a writer is that it's beautifully designed and designed for any type of reader. One of the things I always judge layouts on as a creative director is, does it provide multiple points of entry for readers? Some people are very visual, so they're going to look at the graphs, the charts, the pictures, maybe some captions, and then maybe get into the narrative. Other people will read first word to last word all the way through. Others will scan subheads. your book is designed for any of those readers. I'm serious. I mean, even if you're not an English reader, you could get a ton out of this book, specifically about content marketing. And I can't recommend it highly enough, but I'm really gushing about the design of the book and the thinking of the book and the way it's architected, because everything you just said about being able to think that enables you to teach. Well, this book teaches beautifully, so much so that you don't know you're learning when you're reading it until you realize, oh my gosh, I just walked out of here with a handful of concepts I can act on today and then go back to the book and get another bunch of concepts for tomorrow, etc. So, you know, some of the people who've referred to the book or blurbed the book have mentioned the fact that, who was it? I think it's Ginny Dietrich, who says she keeps it on her desk every day. I totally believe that because I have it right next to my desk every day. But anyway, Andy Crestedina.
Thanks, DP. I appreciate that. It's that's the idea, and I'll pass that along to the designers. It's visual. It's supposed to be the illustrated handbook to content marketing. So it's scannable. It's a reference guide. You open it to any page. But that's digital content best practices, right? And you know this. I mean, look at the visual content that you produce. It's not that we aren't writers, but we all appreciate the disadvantage that content has if it's too dense. If it's, what did you say? You can't come into it from any angle. You know, it's just like these blocks of dense copy have a big disadvantage now. So yeah, it's meant to be scannable, and I'm glad that was helpful to you.
Oh, it absolutely was. This episode of the Nonfiction Brand Podcast is brought to you by Nonfiction Brandversity. It's a free Facebook group dedicated to the art and craft of personal branding. And we'd like to invite you. Just search Nonfiction Brandversity on Facebook and ask to join. You're in, guaranteed. I can't wait to see you on campus. One of the things in the book, you know, as I started reading the introduction and things like that, I was really interested to see that you approached the beginning of Orbit Media very organically, that literally you wanted to have one successful website engagement beget not 50 others, but maybe another or a couple. Someone says, who did your website?
Yeah.
Oh, Orbit Media. Great. That organic word of mouth advertising and growth, which I think is the strongest growth, the strongest, longest lasting style of growth. Seeing that organic from a guy like you, because I'll be honest with you, you speak at a lot of places with a lot of people who are about as far as from organic as you can get in terms of growth hacking. I don't want to pick on growth hackers too much, but there are people who are growth hacking, wearing black hats with twirling black mustaches as they tie their clients to the railroad tracks. You know, I look at those people and go, I get what you're doing, but I don't think it's going to work sustainably long-term. What's your approach on that whole organic growth versus growth hacky growth?
Well, if the most powerful marketing, Mark Schaefer reminds us, is not the marketing that we're doing, it's the marketing our audience is doing on our behalf. It's word of mouth, it's referrals, it's reviews. That's something like 2/3 of all of our marketing now, according to, you know, different studies and combinations of data points from people who put this together. His book, by the way, almost required reading. Marketing Rebellion, outstanding. That is the first probably required reading for any new marketing student today. Explains it so well. Yeah, if you want that word of mouth, if you want positive sentiment about your brand, your content, your services, that isn't a short-term thing at all. It is a long-term play to build reputation. So you get a bunch of emails. You're not going to open all of them. Which ones do you open? You search for a phrase. You're not going to click on everything on the search results page. Which ones do you click on? You're following a set of people in social. You're seeing faces and names in the social streams. Which ones do you pay attention to? It's not some clever trick of the headline. It's not some, you know, use of emoji, you know, or some surprising word. I mean, these things can matter, but what trumps all is when I see Mark Schaefer in my social stream, or I see Andrew Davis in my LinkedIn feed, or I see Maz in a search results page. These are brands that I click on, people I click on, because I trust them. If you ask someone like, oh, who should I be reading? You're passing along someone else's reputation through word of mouth. There aren't any growth hackers who talk about that. That comes from planting seeds, sunshine and rain, taking good care of your people, your network, your content, quality. We just did a survey of like why people hire our company. The number one reason was reputation. I was surprised. I didn't know that. I thought it was like people hire us to improve their search rankings or because they want a better conversion rate. You know, these are the analytics and measurable results. It's the people who are playing the really long game that win in the end because they're not just trying to get an influencer to share something. They're trying to build a friendship. They're not just trying to make an article that ranks today. They're trying to create a body of work that fits together. This is the longest road. It's a harder road, but it's a path to more durable security because you exist not just in a social stream or an inbox. You are in the hearts and minds of your family and friends. That isn't measurable. There are no analytics for that. There's no report that shows you karma is improving. But you have to kind of act as if there was and stay focused on people and the value you're creating.
I can give you a direct example of the word of mouth referral value. And it's the way that I heard of you. I didn't know of you 6 years ago. Sorry. I just didn't. You weren't on my radar. And I certainly wasn't on yours. But I mean, I didn't know who you were. And then a friend of mine who is not just a friend, but a really respected colleague, you know, and I've worked with art directors through my entire advertising and marketing career. And out of all the art directors I worked with, I have three that are like my, I think of them as my gems. These three relationships, the ones where you could have the conversation and not only did they get it, but they plussed it beyond what you thought it could be. And one of those people is Beth Johnston. And she said, do you know Andy Crestedina? And I said, no, not really. And she said, you need to. And when she gave me that you need to, it was not, oh, here's a good follow. It was more like a you need to today start paying attention. So I started. And, you know, I did what everybody does, which is I lurk. You know, I read your stuff. I see what you're doing. If I have an opportunity to see you speak, I jump at it. And the first time I saw you speak at Dream Bank here in Madison, Wisconsin, at the old Dream Bank, you know, the bank Dream Bank, I was floored because I've seen a ton of speakers. And a lot of them are big concept people, broad brush, et cetera. Well, you had a bunch of big broad brush concepts, but then you showed the math in detail in a way that was like a 1-2 punch, which is, oh, great, I get the big concept. But man, you proved it with the metrics in a way that shows me your quality, which is you're not just the big idea guy, but you come in with the math. And I was really, really impressed by that. And again, I'll just point to your book, Content Chemistry, and say the math is in there in a beautiful way. You don't even know you're doing math or paying attention to the math of content marketing because you're telling such a great story when you do it. But boom, I heard about you.
Thanks.
Not because, you know, it was word of mouth from a highly significant trusted friend.
Well, that trust was, you know, is the most important point. What you said, there's three art directors in your life that you've known and worked with. And just imagine how different it is. You introduce one of them to someone compared to, you know, here's a name you might want to talk to. You know, you become an advocate for them. And you are the best at this. I can't believe it. I don't know how to respond or repay you or thank you for these. You've been so generous in helping to promote that Dream Bank event. It was like a textbook case study of social promotion.
But it wasn't like, it wasn't done as a promotion. It was me saying, reaching out to anybody who might see me as any type of credible, saying this is the one you got to go to. It's like me being excited about a movie that I love. You got to go see this movie. You know, and so there wasn't.
That's how I feel about Mark. Yeah, I know it's so genuine, right? It's like my love for his work. I don't know how what we can do to say thanks to that guy for just like showing us this wisdom. And he does it so freely. It's like, wow, how, you know, this is, I just want everyone to know about it. I want everyone to find him and to have what the feeling I had when this light bulb went off on page 20 of Marketing Rebellion. Like, what? Like, that's it. Like, you just nailed it. Like, that's really the status of the industry. So great. Yeah. And I love that feeling and sharing it. It's a great feeling.
Well, it's that word that gets bandied about and bastardized by so many people, authenticity. Forget authenticity, just be authentic. It's authentic love, respect, encouragement, evangelization. And again, the Mark that Andy was talking about is Mark Schaefer in his relatively new book. I think it was published this year, wasn't it? Marketing Rebellion?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I saw him at Social Media Marketing World this year. And I saw you there, but you were surrounded by too many people, so I couldn't say hi. Otherwise, I would have.
His presentation?
Fantastic.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, and the way I describe it to people is that, you know, you go to Social Media Marketing World and there's a fair amount of growth hackers and hustlers and you name it, blah, 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 blah. And the entire keynote structure was day one, Michael Stelzner gives a great keynote. And I loved it because finally he's fallen out of love with Facebook. I haven't ever been in love with Facebook, but it was like really eye-opening to me that someone who has to drink the Kool-Aid as much as he does clearly fell out of love with Facebook. Yay, Michael, welcome. Mm-hmm. You, the scales have fallen from your eyes. And then there were a couple of other keynotes that were, and then the last day, final keynote, Mark Schaefer mm-hmm. comes out and delivers the goods with both barrels in your face. And he threw up a slide, and I don't know how much you know about my background and my fetish for brand, but branding is huge. It's everything I believe in. And he threw up a slide that says, the personal brand is the company brand. And I saw that and went, exactly. Forget everything else you heard from the growth hackers and hustlers here. The personal brand is the company brand. Consequently, what are you doing for your personal brand? And actually, that's where I want to take the conversation on our next episode next week, because this conversation just got started, or it seems to me like it is, but actually we've been on for about 25 plus minutes. So I'm going to draw this episode to a close and say thank you so much to Andy Crestedina of Orbit Media in Chicago, Illinois. Seriously, follow the dude. Crestodina, Andy Crestedina. Follow him. Serves up the goods like nobody else. Mark Schaefer, both of us strongly recommend
him. I know. Get that book. Just get started on that book. Open the beginning of that book. It lays it out.
Yeah, Marketing Rebellion just came out, I think, this year. And we're going to talk to you next week about Andy, how he started as a small local guy and now is prestige worldwide as a speaker to people all over the place. I may exaggerate a little, but not by much. Again, I'm DP Knutton for the Nonfiction Brand Podcast. I'd like to invite everybody to join Nonfiction Brandversity, the free Facebook group. Just ask to join and you are in. And Andy, where can people hook up with you? Like, do you have an email list or other places that they can sign up?
I've never gated any content. It's the email list grows mostly word of mouth, but it's orbitmedia.com/blog. And I write an article there every 2 weeks. That's my frequency. That's about as fast as I can get out the best information I can. And LinkedIn is another good place to connect with me. So ask me anything anywhere and I'll do my best to give you the most valuable answer I can.
Well, and he's totally legit. So make sure you listen to next week's episode as well. I'm DP Knutton for the Nonfiction Brand Podcast, and he is
Andy Crestedina from Orbit Media.
And we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.